Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses for an audience of entrepreneurs like today's guest who's been listening, who actually said, Andrew, when COVID started becoming a thing, I'd be happy to come and do an interview with you. And I was a little too slow because my whole schedule is out of whack. We finally get him on to do the interview. I say, how do I make this a win for you? He says, well, Andrew, I reached out to you because I wanted to tell other people what COVID was about because we're feeling it here, to just send the message that this is something different. You're not prepared. I said, oh, we're definitely too late for that. Brian Miller, I appreciate that you were willing to do that. I actually wanted to have you on here because I'm freaking fascinated by China in general. I see the future in China. I see the opportunity. I see that it's on the rise. I want to learn more about what's going on there. I want to see a business that's growing there. I want to understand how you, as someone from, where did you grow up?
Connecticut.
How you're finding life in China and how you're building your business. His business, for everyone who's listening, is Easy China Warehouse. It's a global fulfillment warehouse for e-commerce sellers. You know how a lot of the stuff that we buy comes from factories in China? Well, a lot of those factories will send that product over to Brian's company for him to send out to warehouses around the world to be shipped to us. Or sometimes they just ship directly to us, depending on where we buy. And so I invited him here to talk about how he built up his business, what life in China is like, and just talk. And we can do that thanks to two phenomenal sponsors. The first, if you don't understand how your customers are feeling, how your audience is feeling right now, you could potentially lose your customers. We're not in a point where you could take your audience, take your customers for granted. I keep surveying my people. Delighted is a great way for you to do it. And I'm going to tell you later why you should be going to Delighted to get their software to help you get a feel of where your audience is. And number two, it's a company called Hostgator. If you haven't started a business, go to Hostgator already. They'll help you get started. Brian, good to have you here.
Thanks for having me on the show.
What are some of the products that you ship out around the world? What have you seen that's especially interesting?
Well, obviously, recently we've seen a lot of personal protection equipment that has gone out.
Like what?
Like masks, gowns for hospital workers, those face shields, we see a lot of them.
I see a lot of those too. The clear plastic things that cover your whole face, forehead to chin. Yeah. Do people wear face masks in China?
Oh, we're wearing masks now. Yeah. I mean, even after the virus is pretty well contained here, people still wear masks out in public, in the metro, on buses. So it's relatively common for most people to wear one.
Is it required?
It's required in the metro and in a public place like building a government building. Not at work, but it used to be a law in China once the virus was becoming very serious in China, like in February, mm-hmm. They actually made it a law that if you leave your house, you have to wear a mask and that they could refuse entry to you into like a supermarket or wherever if you didn't wear one.
Do people comply here? I see a lot of people don't comply with it. California's got a rule about wearing masks. People don't do it. People argue about it. Seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the one thing that I was super impressed with China is that in the beginning, in January, we kind of just started hearing about it. And in terms of that, it was spreading within China. And I'd say within the first week of January, when it started, about half the population was wearing a mask. And by the second week, so mid-January, almost everyone was wearing a mask just because the government recommended it. They didn't even require it at that time. And at the end of January, they made it a law that you had to wear it. And people have continued to do that until today.
Do they tend to be compliant with government rules?
Yeah. So I think a lot of people will maybe hit back at me for this because they'll say, well, they're an authoritarian government. They have to. But in terms of people listening to the government to abide and do the greater good for society, we definitely see people kind of thinking about society as a whole. And that's why I think they like to wear the masks. That's why a lot of people would even self-quarantine when they came from kind of a hotspot to a new city within China, just to protect the rest of society, because the culture is kind of like that in terms of that they care more about the greater good rather than it's less individualistic, you could say.
You grew up basically where I grew up. I was from New York. I feel like we don't do well listening to authority. We were trained not to. I realize I'm also training my kids not to listen to authority. A lot of times How is it for you to be in an environment where you've got to listen?
Yeah, like I think I've become used to it. I agree with you. Like when the virus was spreading, I always told all my friends, like, at least in the US, we care about our freedom too much that we want to do whatever we want to do, right? And I think at least in China, you know, even though maybe the government doesn't always make the right decision, in general, I would say they really make decisions for most of the greater good within society. And once you see that, I think you can start accepting the fact that, you know, you're not always going to have the choice and that you can follow along with that because it's helping most people out. And so that's what I see from at least living in China. And I think I'm kind of okay with it. And in terms of the virus, the fact that everyone wore it, now we can go out without any fear of, you know, contracting anything.
Do you go out to restaurants?
Gym, restaurants, bars, movie theaters just opened. And at least in Shenzhen, there's been no cases for about 2 months. So I feel like all the work was worth it for everyone.
I'm appreciative that you're doing this interview so early in the day. What time is it when, what time was it when we connected?
6:30 a.m. So 6:30 we're just starting. Yep.
What are the hours that people keep in Shenzhen?
In terms of work?
Yeah.
Yeah, usually most people come to the office. Well, Chinese usually start a little bit later, but they like to work later as well. So people will come to the office between 8 and 10 a.m. But we see a lot of people, specifically in Shenzhen, because it's a tech hub for China and the world, that people will work really late until 8, 9, 10 p.m. at night. And I think that also relates to all of the exporting that China's done over the years. So they've always had to have long hours in order to connect with like North American customers or European customers in different time zones. So it's relatively regular for most people to be working, at least in Shenzhen, young people at big tech companies, you know, 10 to 12 to 14 hours a day, for sure.
And how do they feel about it? Frustrated, angry, eager?
I think they know that that's part of the deal if they want those type of opportunities. And the thing about China is it has such a huge population that there's an incredible amount of competition in terms of the market, whether it be employment market, whether it be the actual, you know, business versus business. And so they know that if they don't perform their best, that there's another guy right below them that will replace them. And I think that's what fuels a lot of this acceptance to do these long hours, to work this hard, because they know that there's such a large pool of people that are dying for that seat that they're willing to work much harder than the person below them.
Like that was true in New York in the 80s, in the Wall Street era, you know, where there was a sense of hunger and people were proud that they were working late, proud that they beat out the guy who's waiting for their job, you know, that type of thing. And does it create a toxic environment for you, for other people, where you feel like you're constantly being worked and you don't get time for yourself?
I think in terms of maybe people's health, yes. But I think in terms of the common goal of like the country, like people actually believe that, and rightly so, that, you know, China is becoming one of the largest powers in the world and they're excited.
If not the largest.
Yeah, if not the
most powerful country. It's right. It's on the verge of doing it. And people are, how do people feel about that?
Well, in China, they're excited about it. And so I feel like they don't mind doing it because they also feel like they themselves and their country is like on the upswing and they want to participate in that kind of miracle that's happening in China. And I think the optimism and the hard work is kind of also a pride thing. Like they're very proud of what they've accomplished and they should be, right? Mm-hmm. They've done something incredible and they want to keep that going. And they do, you know, they want to be number one in the world, whether it be the government or the people. And they believe that. They believe that they're going to be it. And I, you know, I think they might. And so with that kind of energy and passion, I feel like they don't mind as much putting in those long hours because they can see the fruits of like their labor, you know?
Yeah. I feel like that's the way we felt in the US, right? Growing up,
I always tell people that. Yeah.
Growing up, people used to feel that way. And then it became this sense of, well, I'm not going to do as well as my parents, or people are telling me that we're not going to do well for this reason or that. And a lot of that optimism, a lot of that excitement, a lot of that sense that we're on the rise is going away.
Yeah. I always compare it to like a sports team that always keeps winning, right? They kind of like get complacent, and you see a little stumble in them. Maybe they like have a bad game, and then they have another bad game. And then they kind of like, they're so complacent that they fall down. You know what I mean? And I kind of can compare that to the US in terms of, I see a lot of complacency in terms of my friends being too complacent in where they are, right? And they don't have the hunger anymore. And I see the hunger in China for sure. And that's what excites me about living here.
And you feel that from other people. Do you express that? Do you feel hungry? Do you feel like Easy China Warehouse is on the rise? It's going to be huge. Do you feel it every day?
Absolutely.
You do. What do you think it's going to be?
I want to become the platform for e-commerce fulfillment in between the factory and Amazon. So Amazon doesn't serve that part of the market, actually. And I think there's a massive opportunity in between when the factory is made to when it gets to Amazon, that we can fill that void in the market.
How'd you know this was an issue?
Well, the main thing was I figured it out because I had started an e-commerce company before this. So I still own a company that sells Bluetooth speakers.
What's it called?
you know, as Amazon sellers, we're very secret about what we sell.
Why is that?
The reason is that it's easy when you see someone successful and someone kind of have a niche in Amazon, people don't want others to know. And the reason is it's easy for other sellers to come in and replicate it. And so people, especially in the Amazon market, they hate telling what they sell or what their products are.
Wow. All right. Tell me in the chat. I'm not going to get into the space. You can trust me. Here, do you know where the chat is on Zoom? I got to look it up.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to go. Nobody knows where the chat is on Zoom. Zoom needs to make it easier for people to chat over to you. Okay. So this site is something you started when? No wonder I didn't see it on your LinkedIn profile.
Yeah, it's not shown.
Okay. All right. I see what you're saying. And I'm not going to reveal what type of thing you're doing, but I get it. This is really interesting.
Yeah, we do Bluetooth speakers basically.
With a little bit of a twist on it.
With a twist on it, yeah.
Okay. So you started doing this how? How did you get into selling Bluetooth speakers?
Well, I had a friend that was the SEO manager of Airbnb at the time, my college roommate. And he was like, did you hear about this Amazon thing? We can kind of sell stuff online. I'll do the SEO and you can go find the products. And for our product at the time, we had kind of seen it, but we wanted to make it better. Basically, we wanted a product for ourselves. So we built it for what we wanted.
You mean the kind of speakers that you wanted to carry?
Yeah, exactly. This is what we wanted to carry because we thought it was cool.
How'd you get somebody to make this thing?
And so, yeah, on the weekends, I went around China and looked for a factory that can make this. And every weekend, I would actually come down to Shenzhen, where I live now, and I would meet with speaker factories. And we had eventually found a factory that matched, and we had them make 10 speakers. Okay. That's how we started, with like $1,000 and 10 speakers. And we shipped them into Amazon, and in like a week or two, we sold them all. We were like, wow, this is easier than we thought, you know? And then we bought 100 and then we shipped 100 and 1,000.
And they made them to your specifications.
Exactly, to our specifications.
And you knew how to speak Chinese because you went to Beijing Normal University?
Yeah. So that was after I graduated university, but I studied Mandarin for 2 years. So I can read and write and speak fluent Chinese. So I was able to work directly with the factory and tell them what we needed and develop this product that we thought we wanted and we thought other people wanted, right? Uh-huh. And so that's how we launched that company. And I still own this company today. And from doing e-commerce and from selling online, I saw just a massive hassle and pain in taking those products from the factory and bringing it into Amazon, because a lot of sellers use Amazon to fulfill all of their orders.
How did you do it? What was the process that you went through?
The process that we went through is we found like a traditional freight forwarder, and they would take our products and put it into a container. And then they would ship it over to the US where they would need to bring it. Since we weren't big enough, they would have to take all of the people that were in that container. So there was maybe 5 or 10 companies' products in that container. They would have to deconsolidate them at a warehouse in the US. Mm-hmm. And then we would have to manage the shipment from that warehouse all around the US to Amazon warehouses. And it was expensive. It was time consuming. It was a lot of paperwork that I felt was unnecessary. And it was complicated. And so I thought that there was probably a better way to manage these shipments than to do it that way. It just seemed insane.
And you were still in school at the time?
No, this was after I'd been working for some time. So I was working for the Chinese government. Mm-hmm. And at the last 2 years of working for them, we kind of started this concept of the e-commerce company. And then when I felt like we could actually, you know, it was working, I left that company and worked on it full time.
I see it now. This is 2017 is when you created this business, the e-commerce business.
A little earlier, because I was already working at that previous company. So I didn't put it in my profile, right? So
you didn't want them to know. Are side hustles okay in China?
They absolutely are. Like, everyone's doing a side hustle in China, actually. But you kind of try not to tell your boss about it. Like, everyone's got a little gig on the side, but you don't want to like let them know. Yeah, it's all secret.
All right, I should talk about my first sponsor. You know, I started focusing on entrepreneurs who were doing especially well after COVID, Brian. And one of the things that I noticed was there was this sense of hesitation, even though they were being interviewed because their company was doing better than last year. There was hesitation. When I asked them about it, what I noticed was they were worried that it was going to go away. They recognize that customers right now are going through bad economic times and they're likely to make big switches, but we don't know when. Yeah. That's where Delighted comes in. They've got a beautiful website called delighted.com. And what they excel at is asking questions of your customers that help you understand where they are. And you could do this on their website, through inserts, through buttons, through widgets. You could do it via email. You can do it after sale, pre-sale, whatever. And they're really good about making it beautiful. What's more important than that is they're also great at taking the data that you get back and making it actionable, usable, so you know what to do. Well, here's the thing that they taught me when I talked to them at Delighted. They said, in the past, you could just throw up an NPS score, net promoter score. How likely are you, scale of 1 to 10, to tell your friends about us? How likely are you to recommend us? Post-COVID, that is not very, and it's not as useful as it was before, because sometimes people just are in bad moods. Sometimes something bad just happened. And to ask them that kind of question is going to give you data that's not as usable as it was before. It's more reflective of how they're feeling than how you're doing in their world. And so one of the things that Delighted recommended based on their experience is ask people more open-ended questions now. And so if you're asking how likely are you to recommend, make sure to have a good follow-up question, or maybe even start off with a follow-up question, or even ask, how are you doing today? How is your world? Maybe even ask if there's something big in the news, ask how they're handling it. And they've got the widgets that will let you make this happen really easy. And then the follow-up question, if you've got a simple yes or no, thumbs up, thumbs down, or number, and they're really good at doing that, the follow-up question is one that's more open-ended that can get you some qualitative data on the customer to know whether you're going to keep them or not, to know whether you should follow up with them or not. And if this all seems overwhelming, you should understand they make it super easy to finally use that data. In fact, I told them I could create all this that you're doing using a simple form maker. Why do I need Delighted? They said, do you ever use anything that you get back? You ever use that feedback? I said, no. They said, that's the problem. That's what we're really solving. The questions are the nice interface for it. So it's Delighted. That's the company. They've been sponsors before. I'm so glad that they're coming back. It means that it's done well for them. People are signing up. And right now, Ari's our editor. She's about to put a URL right here to give people a deal that will allow them to go and sign up and get started with Delighted. Hit it, Ari.
The URL is delighted.com/Mixergy. That's delighted.com/Mixergy.
All right. Brian, what got you into China in the first place?
Yeah, that's a good question. So after I graduated in 2008, which was the other kind of crisis we had, not only were there not really many opportunities available, but I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. And so I actually left the US to travel around the world. I spent time in Europe. I taught some English there to kind of survive. I spent over a year there. And then I went to the Middle East. And then from the Middle East, I went through India, which was incredible. Okay. And then in India, I was like, what should I do? And I had a friend in Taiwan, and he said, come out to Taiwan. Asia's super hot now mm-hmm. in terms of the economy and what's happening. The culture is incredible. You gotta come out and see it. Just come here and you'll love it. And that's what happened. I came to Taiwan. I slept on his couch and I started to just love Taiwan. It was incredible. And they speak Mandarin as well. And at that time, I saw China as kind of, they were much smaller at the time, but they were the rising power in, they were the rising economy, whether it be in Asia and the world. And I said to myself, wow, this culture is amazing. I should start learning Mandarin and eventually move to mainland China to do business there or find some opportunity. And that's kind of how I started to go to China and be introduced to it.
Is it too personal for me to ask you if you started dating in China?
Absolutely. I mean, that's fine. I actually, one of the reasons I started studying Mandarin is because I was like, there's like 95% of the women I can't talk to. Like, this is a problem, you know? Like, how do I talk to more of them? They're all beautiful. What do I got to do? Well, I got to learn their language. You know what I mean? And yeah, it was business, but it was also personal. I wanted to like get into the culture. I wanted to like date there. I wanted to like, you know, have a life there that was
normal.
What
was dating and having a life like?
Oh my God. Dating in China is very difficult.
I figured, just, you know what? I feel like the US makes it super easy. I went to Argentina. You suddenly realize it's a Catholic world. It's not as easy as it is here. It's a lot of hiding and a lot of people who live with their parents who have to find a way. Thankfully, I just got married, so it wasn't an issue for me, but it was shocking to hear the stories that people came back with. Well, yeah. What was it like for you?
Yeah. I mean, at least in China, like when younger women are not so worried about getting married, but specifically when they get into their mid-20s, there's a lot of pressure from their parents and their families to like hurry up and get married. And so you have women that you would meet that they would basically ask you, hey, are you like almost directly, are you interested in getting married? Okay. And if you said no, they would say, okay, don't waste my time. I don't even want to date you. I don't even want to see you because that's not my goal. I'm on a different mission, you know? Okay. So they're like, whereas maybe in the US, like we date longer and we think, okay, when we find the one that matches, like then we'll get more serious. Right. But they want to get serious right away. Like they want to like get down to make sure that their other side is on the same page as them. And that's a huge thing. And then just culturally, like the norms of how you date and how the family interacts with you is all different. So yeah,
it's just a different world. Early on.
No, usually later on. But once you meet the family, it usually means that it doesn't mean 100%, but it means that you're like on the track to marriage. Whereas in the US,
same thing here, no? Well, no, maybe not. You're right.
I don't know exactly. Like you would probably go to family events. I mean, we all know that we have like that uncle that like brings a new girlfriend every Christmas, right? So like there's always like, you know, and it's not that serious. But in China, it's very serious. Yeah.
Well, are you dating someone now?
I am. Yeah.
You are.
Which is not normal, actually.
Right?
It is very good. Yeah.
I got a good friend. He's single during COVID. It was great at first, better than me because I had kids in the house. I was going nuts. Then he started getting really lonely. Just can't go out and meet anyone. Yeah. What's it like now?
You've got to think as well, though, that like COVID is probably forcing both sides, men and women, to really be open to online dating now, right? I guess even more than before. But yeah, in terms of COVID in China, like things are pretty normal. So like life is relatively normal in terms of going out to restaurants, going out to eat, dating, going to the gym. So back to pretty much normal. Yeah.
At what point did you say, you know what, the shipping is a big enough problem, I'm going to get into it?
Yeah. So this is kind of an interesting story because I had started doing some consulting for, like, I wanted to diversify away from my speaker business in terms of just having another source of revenue because I didn't know if it was sustainable forever. And so I started working for companies and doing kind of their sourcing and logistics within China, other e-commerce companies. And I had one company that really liked my work and they told me, hey, like, can you help us set up a small fulfillment center for us in China? And I said, yeah, that sounds good, because I see the problem, you're seeing the problem, and I'll help you set it up. And I took a small deposit and I started a company in China, like registered a company under my name and hired some employees and started building out a small little warehouse in Shenzhen where I would ship the goods for them. And about 2 or 3 weeks before, you know, we were about to launch, the owner of that business sent me a text message and they said, well, we're not going to go through with the fulfillment center. So I had like a company, I had employees, I had like a warehouse in China, and I had no customers, zero.
Wow.
And so, yeah, at that point it was like, whoa, I had spent a few months on it and I knew I needed it, but I didn't have enough volume myself to justify an entire warehouse, right? And so I had been very connected in the e-commerce kind of communities from just being an e-commerce seller. And I reached out to everyone I could to see if they were interested in me helping them solve this problem for them. And I had one person come back that was a pretty big seller and agree to try. And that's how we started. He saved my business.
Who's the person?
Yeah, it's a guy that runs Dave Huss. He runs an e-commerce store that sells yarn and quilting things. Yeah, like quilting for hobbyists. Yeah,
he's a pretty well-known person, right?
He's well-known in the
e-commerce world.
Yeah, he's well-known in e-commerce and in Facebook marketing, like Facebook ads and things like that. Yeah, and so he, you know, whether I told him or not, he was one of the guys that saved the business. And then from there, we were able to acquire more customers and build it up to what it is today. So we were on the brink of having to shut it down. I thought I was just going to like walk away with nothing.
And what did he need? He needed you to hold on to his yarn from the factories and then ship it to individual customers?
Correct. Yeah. Everywhere around the world. So we started essentially what people hear as drop shipping. We would take their product right from the Chinese factory and ship it to the end customer directly from China.
Oh, drop shipping from the factory?
From our warehouse.
From yours. So that's not drop shipping though. That's
yeah. Right? It's not really drop shipping, but it's easy for people to understand what we're doing when I describe it as drop shipping, but it's like direct from China fulfillment from our warehouse. Yeah.
He bought it from the warehouse. He bought it from the factory, kept it in your warehouse, and you just would ship it to anywhere around the world. And I asked you before we got started, why wouldn't somebody just send it directly to Amazon, or why wouldn't they have a 3PL? What's 3PL stand for?
A third party logistic company.
That's what you do. Why wouldn't someone have a 3PL here in the US to do it? And you said, well, that's fine for the US. What about the rest of the world, especially smaller countries? You don't want to have a 3PL agreement and stuff in warehouses all over the world, right?
Yeah. And it's also easier to manage like your cash flow. So you don't need to order as much inventory from the warehouse. So you can be a little bit more lean in terms of how much you order. And for a lot of the people that do run their own sites, they drive a lot of their traffic through Facebook. So some of the ads might hit really well in terms of their success, and they might have an incredible explosion in orders. And being close to the factory allows us to keep up with that demand as it comes. You know what I mean? Because those ads are either very successful or they're not, and they can run for like a month, and they're like, it's like, you know, the craziest amount of sales that you've ever seen, and then they drop off to zero after.
And so it allows he has to call up the factory, tell them this, we need more of this type of yarn because the ads worked. And then all you have to do is just be prepared to take it. And the factory can spin up yarn at that speed for him.
Yeah. And then they would spin it up for us. They would send it to our warehouse and we just ship it right out. He would actually sell a lot of things that he didn't have in stock. So he would always sell when he was out of stock, he'd sell like thousands of items. And I'd have to sell him an email and I'd say, hey man, like we have no inventory, but you're selling like 100 a day. Can you send us this product? And he didn't have any of it. He was just selling it, but he wouldn't have a lot of it. So once we received it, we would ship it right out the door.
Because he's just so good at Facebook ads and Google ads, he's coming up with ideas. And if they hit, well, he'll figure it out afterwards.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
And so in order to get started, you need a warehouse, which is space. How much did the warehouse cost roughly?
Yeah. So in the beginning, we had a really small warehouse. It was about 200 square meters.
Okay.
And it was only, you know, about $500 a month to rent it.
Okay.
So it was relatively cheap and it wasn't that big, but it like served our needs because we didn't have a lot of volume. You know what I mean?
And you needed some shelves. Did you have to buy the shelves or does it come with the warehouse?
No, all the commercial space in China is usually just empty. You have to kind of put your own things in it. So we had to buy shelves, computers. We started by just printing out each order manually. So I'd take like an Excel sheet and I'd upload it into the shipper's system and they would just print out hundreds of orders and then we'd have to match them all. And obviously doing that, there's tons of room for human error. So it's like me sitting in a warehouse, like figuring out how to put all these things together. And that's, I literally shipped the first order on my own, you know? And we eventually evolved it to use a third party's
software. Yeah, what software do you use? I interviewed a company that does that.
We use a Chinese software. It's called, I don't know if anyone will know about it, RTB Rantongbao. And they're basically a warehouse management software. They're a Chinese company. And the reason why we wanted to go with a Chinese company is that we need all the back end to be in Chinese because all the operators, all of the people at our company are Chinese. And they need to read everything in Chinese, especially the low-skill labor that's in the warehouse. They're not going to know any English, right? And also the advantage with going with a Chinese company is that they're connected in terms of all the APIs to all the local Chinese shipping companies. So we can easily print out labels and things like that more simply because those software is more connected into the ecosystem here.
And so now it tells them, here's the label. No, what does it do now? What's the magic that it does?
Exactly. Yeah. So the magic is our customer will put in an inbound warehouse order. And when it arrives, they can match the tracking number that receives with the product. They'll count it automatically. Mm-hmm. It will come all up in the system and then they'll put it into inventory. And when we receive an order, it prints out delivery notes with each item that needs to be on the order. And they go and they take it and they scan it. And once they scan it, they can weigh it and the label will print out automatically. So it's kind of foolproof, right?
Yeah.
Like it automatically does everything. They stick the label on and then they label it, they scan it to make sure it's left the warehouse. Mm-hmm. And then we pass it to the carriers. So it's very hard for them to make an error in shipping now with the software that we use.
The software now is really good. And then how do you connect with your customers? Is it a Zapier integration or something else?
No, most of our customers use Shopify, at least the ones that do the direct from China fulfillment. So we had our software developers create the API to pull the orders off their store. Mm-hmm. And then we take that data, fulfill it, and then our software will return all the tracking numbers back into the store after we've shipped. So we do it all by API. But originally, we just did it by CSV. And actually, tons of human error. You can't imagine. Double shipping stuff. Like it was a complete nightmare. Yeah.
So. I love that CSV. It's basically like a spreadsheet, comma, delimited file. I love how universal it is. And I still hate every time I get one of those files. This is a good time for me to talk about my second sponsor, which is TopTal. If you have a need for something like this, like integration with other software, you want to build it yourself, but you don't have the expertise in-house, go to TopTal. Just hire somebody from there. Tell the matcher what you're looking for, and they will, chances are, have found somebody who's done this before many times for other companies. They'll build it for you. They don't have to learn on the job. They're experts at it. And when you're done, you can move on, or you could keep hiring that person full-time, hire them part-time, whatever you need. There was one entrepreneur I interviewed, the founder of Picker. He said, I just call on my developer from TopTal whenever we need that person. And then when we don't work with them. It's kind of like, someone said, Noah Kagan said, it's like AWS for developers. Spin them up when you need them, spin them down when you don't. You could even hire a team of people for when you need them. And yes, of course, you could also keep them full-time. All right, if you need to hire from TopTal a developer to do this or anything else, go to toptal.com/mixergy. You'll be showing them that you heard me talk about them, which I appreciate. You'll also get 80 hours of developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours, in addition to a no-risk trial period. That's top as in top of your head, tal as in talent, toptal.com/mixergy, toptal.com/mixergy. I wonder if I'm saying the URL too much. At first, I was too quick with it. And then I heard myself and go, what the hell are you saying, Andrew? Slow the frick down. And then Now I wonder if I'm saying the URL too much. What do you think? You're a marketer. How's it going?
Yeah, I've listened to a few of your podcasts when you've said it quick. I think it's a little too fast. Like I can't.
Did I do it too slow now? Too much now, or should I slow it down?
I don't know. I think just saying the URL a bit slower probably will give some people some time to write it down. Because every time it says it, it's like it's gone. You know, unless I want to bring that, unless I want to like rewind the episode or whatever. Right. So, yeah,
that's good feedback. Yeah, you don't realize that I'm spelling it out until I'm three letters in, and by then it's too late. Oh, it sucks to be a New Yorker sometimes. What was it like growing up in Connecticut for you?
It was great. I mean, we live really close to New York, so we were always like very connected to that New York City scene in terms of like people going there to work. But we also got
work in New York and live in Connecticut.
No, my dad was also an entrepreneur, so he started his own business selling during the dot-com bubble, selling used computer equipment. That was a thing, and he built local and wide area networks for large companies. But he would buy and flip like networking equipment
back in the
like to big companies. He would sell to like Pepsi and Mercedes, and he would buy stuff on the market and then resell it. So there was like a secondhand, you know, router market that he participated in.
Yeah. What were you like as a kid?
What was I like?
What was your passion? What were you about back then?
Back in the day, I mean, I loved sports. I played a lot of like soccer. I loved lifting in the gym and things like that. But I was also a super quiet kid. I actually was incredibly shy when I was young. And it wasn't until I went to university and was forced to basically talk to people that I learned how to like socialize. You know what I mean? So like, I remember being in my dorm room and like, I just got there and there were like all these new people. I'm just sitting alone and I'm like, well, I guess I got to go like talk to people, because like, I just wasn't really open to like meeting a lot of people when, you know, before I went to university. So, yeah.
I would think that's one of the reasons why I wanted to go away for school. I ended up staying at home, going to NYU, commuting from Queens in every day. And it was basically like high school plus instead of a college dorm experience. If for me, I didn't have to get to know people until sometime during college, where at work, my boss said, we have to go to breakfast with someone and I want you to charm them so that they want to do business with us. And I said, no one taught me to charm you. What is this?
And then, how would you charm them? What would you do?
She was good. She was just talking. It was what you might call small talk, but with connection. And I didn't know how to do that. If they could have asked me a specific question about the stock market, I could have answered it. I could have learned it. But just chatting with them about stuff, I didn't have it. I asked you about your relationship. If we were not recording, I would probably ask you so much more about your relationship. I saw a little bit of a smile there about how you got to know women in China. That would be a thing that you're expected to have a conversation about if it's a work dinner, right? What life is like in China, about your apartment, which looks pretty freaking good. And all that stuff doesn't have any logical sense. And I couldn't do it. And then I was embarrassed, but I went to the bookstore and I got a copy of Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. And I got two other books to hide it between, because I was so embarrassed. I don't know what I was embarrassed by. What was it? The person who was checking me out going to laugh at me? I don't know. Yeah. But I got that. And then I took it home and that got me started. That was huge.
Yeah, that's a great book. I always say, like, whenever anyone asks me what's like your favorite book, I always reference that book. I was forced to read it at university, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Yeah. It's incredible. Yeah.
And did you use it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's like one of the timeless books, right? That you read, and it's just as valid 100 years ago as it is today. It's a great book. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I wanted an operating system for people, and he tells you the operating system for people within like the first chapter, if not the first section. And that helped me. We all have egos. That's the thing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And he doesn't say it in a bad way. Just people have egos. Now let's
play to that.
Right.
Yeah. And play to that. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Until then, I thought I was the only one that had ego and everyone else was just a nothing, that they had no goals, no nothing. Like, so funny to say, but honestly, that's what I thought. How did, after you got your first customer, how did you end up getting more customers?
Actually, yeah, just mainly in the beginning, it was all referrals. So the thing about our business is we're kind of the backbone of e-commerce companies. And so we're critical in terms of, if we make mistakes, it really hurts people's sales. It really makes them lose a lot of money. And so the most effective way that we found from the beginning and even till now is like serve our customers really well, and they will, by word of mouth, tell other people about our business. And our best conversion rate in terms of like when I talk to a new potential customer is always a referral. We convert them very well because, you know, there's that trust that they've already been given from their friend or whatever. So that's how we started, really, is a lot of referrals from other friends that I knew in the market that kind of referred us new people, new customers.
What's your connection to Tropical MBA?
I'm actually part of their Dynamite Circle, which is their private kind of entrepreneur group. And they talk about, and you know, in the group, they talk a lot about location independent, you know, businesses. And that's kind of the first time I met my people, I call them, like other entrepreneurs that think like me, that run businesses and start businesses like me. And they have a conference every year in Bangkok that I started going to. And I just loved it. It was like 250 entrepreneurs of people that had a like mind, and I could talk about anything with them and they got it.
And well, what's your connection? Because it feels like the Tropical MBA people are more about travel being location independent, which you're not. You're location dependent heavily, right?
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
And they're very much about it. Like, I could spin up a business quickly. They become, it feels like you're the infrastructure guy for those people. Not so much you could relate to them, but maybe power them.
Yeah, I think, I can power them. But I think the way in which I relate is that since I live in China and I live in a different country, a lot of those guys that are in that group do travel often or live abroad. And I think having that connection of, you know, how we deal with life in another country is not easy. And that's like the really strong bond that we all have, is that we like, we're kind of the weird outcast that didn't fit in, and we left the US and we're kind of running around. And that's how we all find a commonality. Yeah.
Yeah. That part I get a lot. Do you ever envy the stuff that they're building? Because some of these guys in Tropical MBA are just making bank.
I do. I envy how it, I mean, to me, it seems easy because we build physical infrastructure to ship physical things, like warehouses and like software and like humans loading and unloading containers. Like for my whole warehouse, I do every job just to understand how hard it is.
Yeah.
And we have to load containers. It is incredibly hard work. I could not imagine how hard it is to like load a full container of goods with boxes. I tried it. and it's really, really hard work. And I kind of envy the guys on the internet that are, you know, doing SEO and doing, you know, affiliate things and all this stuff. And the money seems like so easy. It looks easy. I don't know how easy it is, but it looks incredibly easy. And we have to do like painstaking manual work to make money. And I think I envy that. I don't think it's easy in reality, but it looks easy.
So. I went to Baby Bathwater, an event also for people who are internet entrepreneurs. I'm not a skier, but I went to their ski event, and I was in a lodge with this dude who had a guide to how to text your wife and seduce her. And that thing was like making money for him, making bank, you know, like and that's his thing. It was just shocking to see all the stuff that people are doing and making money. And meanwhile, you got physical products to load. You can't double your book. Well, actually, how did you do this year compared to last year? I was going to say you can't double your business. After COVID, how did you do?
Yeah, we did double. So you that did. Was one of the, that was one of the best things about COVID for us. I mean, as bad as the virus was for the world, you know, we're seeing a lot of consumers shift their purchases online, and also a lot of consumers that weren't purchasing online, like the older generation, maybe where my parents were. Now they're like buying stuff online for grocery shopping or for their produce. And it's like they would have never started doing that unless they were forced to open that account and start using that account.
Right.
And so our customers who are all e-commerce companies, their sales have actually grown as a result because they're, I think they're taking a larger share of the pie in terms of the overall, you know, consumer pie. So yeah, it's been very good for us and almost so good that it was overwhelming. Like I felt like, you know, as an entrepreneur, you want to grow sales like crazy, but whenever it happens, everything breaks, right? And you're miserable again.
Like what? Because, broke.
Just because like our volume increased so much that we didn't have enough human power to actually like do all the invoicing to like get everything done because we were shipping so much, you know, multiple times what we were used to. We were just trying to handle our orders and all the back office stuff we didn't have time for because we just didn't have the manpower to handle that surge in demand. Yeah.
And so what'd you do to deal with it? Hire systems?
Yeah. We basically hiring. Like I've had to learn how to hire. I just told the person that helps me with hiring, keep bringing people in the door for interviews and don't stop. Just keep doing it. And we just keep hiring. That's all we do.
How many people do you have now?
We have 15 now.
What's a low skilled worker cost?
Yeah. So in China, a low skilled worker is around 20 to 25 RMB. So that's about $3 to $4 US an hour.
Okay.
Per hour. Correct. Yeah. And a low skill, maybe monthly wage worker is around, let's say in a warehouse or in a factory in Shenzhen. And Shenzhen is a higher wage area. It's around 5,000 RMB, which I think now is around $600-$700 a month.
Okay. I should just keep saying Shenzhen instead of China because we're looking at a pretty big city, but it's obviously not representative of the whole country.
Right. Yeah. The wages are a bit higher here because of the development in terms of, you know, it's a first tier city in China. So China kind of separates its city by how it's developed. And the first tier cities are the ones we probably know, which is Beijing, Shanghai, Guangzhou, and Shenzhen. And in those cities, you have higher tech companies, higher skill labor, and higher wages in general.
By the way, you'd never hear anyone in the US call anyone a first tier city. It's like, I once heard Howard Stern referred to one of the markets he was in as having a second city mentality, but you never use it in a positive way. You never want to rank people unless you're trying to rank them, you know, like insult them. It's culturally, it's so different. Give me more stuff about China before we end. And actually, well, before we end, I want to ask a little bit more about China and then I'm going to close off with a suggestion that I have for you. Okay.
Okay. Awesome.
All right. So tell me more. Like you were telling me about how fast a building gets built in Shenzhen.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think the thing that I'm so impressed about is just the speed of China. So we see, at least in terms of construction, you can leave Shenzhen for a few months. And in those months, they can build, you know, 50 to 75% of the building. Before you know it. And I think seeing how fast that's built and seeing how fast they're also constructing metro lines throughout the city and public transportation, you know, in a few years, you have a whole new line that goes across the city. And it's like, you're seeing it in real time happen just at an incredible amount of speed. And I think it gives you some energy every day when you wake up, when you're in that environment, you're like, I want to move that fast too.
Versus
I want my company
here.
To move that fast. Yeah.
Do you know how many years they've been arguing over a freaking bike lane on Valencia Street in San Francisco? The logic makes so much sense. You reduce cars, reduce traffic, encourage more people to be out, make it easier, make it safer. Freaking conversations over and over again because some store owner doesn't want people to not be able to park in front of his store because he thinks that the way he can get customers is from people parking. I don't know what it is. And then once they do, there's all this stuff and it's been agreed to. It's still not being built. We're talking about freaking get a pan of paint and go paint the thing on the street. No, it's not built. And in China, whole rail system is getting built. New York, the thing is falling apart. It's known for the subway. You'd think that if it's known for the subway, I don't want to be down on the US, but come on, people, let's think bigger. Let's understand that we're falling behind the world and we're not recognizing it because we're so much in our heads about how great we are, you know? It's like a guy who's patting himself on the back and not realizing that he's getting lapped because the race is still going on.
And there's a lot of negatives for definitely having a one-party system like in China. For sure, we all know that. But there's also what you don't think about is the incredible positives. And this is one of them. The government makes a decision. They think this rail line is the best for all the citizens in this region. And they do it. They tell people, look, if you're in the way, we're going to pay you for your house or your business location. But you got to get out of the way. We got to do this for everyone. You know what I mean?
And you know what? Singapore doesn't have one party. Singapore doesn't have one party. I was in Singapore. The guy says, you know how the street we're on is Beach Street? I said, yeah, I've heard that there's like prostitutes in your building. He goes, yeah, it doesn't matter. They're about to tear down our building. Our building is Beach Street because it used to be on the beach. They built into the water more buildings, which is why it's no longer on the beach anymore. They're going to tear this building down. I have no say in it. And they're going to build more newer, better buildings. You look at things getting built. You don't have to have a one party. I mean, obviously, I get the benefit of the one party system in this context, but
right.
God knows, I lived in New York. I saw bridges all over that were built 100 years ago. They had multiple parties back then arguing with each other, and they still got it built, and then they moved on to – it's just so frustrating to see. What about day-to-day? I remember I moved to Argentina is my big context. Obviously, I've been to other countries, but that's the one where I moved to most recently for a year. And I remember walking around saying, I want a cup of coffee, and just walking around with a cup of coffee is so weird. The woman – in order to get me a to-go cup, had to look around her office. She found one in the restaurant that was literally black and dusty. And I was so eager for just regular coffee to walk around with that I accepted this styrofoam dusty black cup. And I took that and walked around with a media luna. It's not how it's done. If you're going to sit down, you sit down for coffee. You have a little media luna and you move on. Dinner is at 10 o'clock. Give me like little slice of life experience in Shenzhen.
Yeah, I would say the thing that's kind of most impressive is the infrastructure in terms of delivery. So in the US, everyone's like very excited about like prime day delivery, right? One day delivery.
Yeah.
Man, in China, we have 30-minute delivery. Like one day, that's way too long.
What could you get in 30 minutes?
All your groceries. You can order all of your groceries and they will come in 30 minutes. Like, and it doesn't cost a lot of money. And the delivery in terms of like food, let's say like takeout and all that stuff is incredible. I can order anything I want. It will be at my house between 30 and 45 minutes. Regardless, ice, food, prepared food, sushi, my groceries. It's incredible.
And you're doing it all on an app.
All on an app. Yeah. Everything on an app. And they have like kind of teams of bike, kind of motorbikes that are running around delivering all this stuff. And it's incredible. Like some people say, like, could you ever move back in the US? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if I could live without not getting something within 30 minutes. You know, it's just like, and I think that's what's become in China is their infrastructure in terms of the technology and the type of delivery and things like that has really exploded. And that's what I say is the most interesting and fun thing about.
What would you get delivered? Would you get breakfast delivered? You had a nice cup of coffee. Can I see that glass again?
Yeah, this is a double wall glass here. Yeah,
it just looked nice. Even the way you were drinking it as we were talking. You're not like me. I've got my big thing of hot water and I'm drinking all day. Would you have coffee delivered?
You could, yeah. You could have coffee delivered. You could have ice delivered. You could have fresh produce delivered.
Anything. What's one of the things that you have delivered that's kind of that's different for us in the US? Yeah.
Yeah. Like anytime I want, like you can get a bottle of like, maybe it's not, you can get cocktails delivered if you want.
Wow. Like, okay.
Like there are bars that will like, they're on the delivery app. And if you want like a mojito, like at 2 p.m, just order from them. They'll deliver cocktails. So I think that's like something, it's probably, I don't know if it's even legal in the US because of the kind of drinking laws, but
yeah,
things like that, you could even do that. Yeah. It's incredible.
Wow. I got to close out with a bit of advice for you. Look at how fascinated we are by China, the day-to-day life, the way you built your business, the kinds of companies that are your clients who are being run sometimes by people who are just ordinary people working just a regular job, sometimes by people who are traveling the world with their laptop and working, sometimes people who are in tropical countries just sitting there working.
Right.
There's so much content for you to bring out there. There's so much of you. There's so much of your world that I would love to see. And I feel like you're not doing enough for me to know whether you're legit or not. I had to reach out to a mutual friend to say, is this guy for real? Or am I is this another person trying to get on Mixergy and take advantage, right? There's a little bit of you, which is how I knew who to reach out to. But I feel like it's not just you. It's everyone in your space is not public enough. is not open enough. It's not, let me just show you the freaking picture. Forget I'm on Instagram. I'm not going to give you the Instagram bull shots. I'm just going to give you slice of life day to day. When you think of China, when you think of manufacturing, when you think of whatever, you should be thinking of me. You should be thinking Brian Miller's the guy. Like, who was it? Who, the Huff guy? Dave Huss. Huh.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying you should do what he's doing. I was Googling him just as we were talking to get a sense of who he is. He's branding himself the paid traffic guy, right? Like the China guy, the China delivery guy, there's nobody there who's doing it. And I feel like you've got a real opportunity. And God knows we are fascinated by China. Obviously, there are people who are frustrated by China. I get it. I'm not putting them down. I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just saying there's also a group of people who are really fascinated by China, who are really seeing the opportunity to build. And the whole thing is so different that they are dying for somebody to illuminate it. The way that when I started Mixergy, there was no one saying, hey, you see this Reddit site? Let me bring you the guy who created Reddit and tell you how he did it. And you know what? It's not that crazy to build Reddit. In fact, it's overly simplistic to build Reddit.
Right.
Let me bring you this guy who had a wacky idea for storing files online and using this, what was it called? The Universal Pocket or whatever, Drew Houston, right? Like there's somebody needs to do that. Let me show you how I get a mojito built. Get a mojito here. In fact, we're going to do this thing right now. And in 30 minutes, by the end of this interview, there'll be a mojito here. Now, what does that mean for you guys if you're listening? Boom, that whole thing. I'd love to see that.
I agree. I appreciate the advice. I think it's incredible advice. Yeah. I've had some friends also say it because I've been in China so long that I know so much, but I don't share it enough with the world. And I agree with that completely. Yeah.
And then everyone's doing these events in Thailand. Screw it. If I want to go hang out, I'll go with my wife. I'll go out and hang out with my buddies. But if I'm going for work, I wouldn't mind if you did an event in Shenzhen, right? Let's just have a get together in Shenzhen. And here's how bad I am at understanding China. I wanted to go to run my marathon in China and do interviews in China when I did my 7 marathons last year. Mm-hmm. I talked to a friend of mine who I don't know if he's comfortable being called out, so I never mention his name, but he's a guy who travels a lot for a well-known top VC firm here.
Right.
He's a partner there. And he goes, Andrew, you want to just bust into where? Beijing? Where are you thinking? You want to go to China? Just show up unannounced. You're giving me a week notice and you want entrepreneurs to give your revenue to you. You don't understand the basics of how it's done. And then he steered me towards going to do interviews in Singapore, which was totally open. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. I didn't know that you're not super comfortable revealing your revenue, right? That's why I didn't ask you that question. I told you I was going to ask you, but give you a chance to say, I'm not going to tell you, but let's be open. And then there's a reason why I didn't ask you. On my way to Mongolia, the woman at the United terminal said, Andrew, do you have a visa to go to China? I said, I'm not going to China. He goes, you have a stopover in China. China is different. You think you could just even do your own stopover and do whatever you want, right? That's how little I know about it. But look at how fascinated I am. We're all fascinated. You're there. I'd love to see more of that. I just realized that looking at your face, I've been ranting for way too long. I could see, I saw a few minutes ago.
No, I enjoy this rant. I enjoy when people get excited about it. Because to be honest, like I've been telling my friends and family about China for so long and they're sick of it. So I'm glad when I meet another guy that's super excited about it.
Bring that on. All right. That's all I got. That's my little bit of feedback for you, Brian. Brian Miller is the founder of, I'm so protective of the secrets that my guests tell me that I just delete everything you told me about your speaker business. So I don't accidentally reveal the special thing of the speaker. I'm so freaking paranoid about that stuff. I've never once revealed something. Well, no, it turns out I once might have. It's a whole long story, but I think the person was okay, but still bugs the hell out of me. Anyway, Brian Miller is the founder of Easy China Warehouse. Check him out at easychinawarehouse.com. And I want to thank the two sponsors who made this interview happen. The first, if you need to build anything, if you need software developers, you've heard so many guests say that they've used TopTal. Let me say it slowly like a regular person. TopTal. T-O-P. Well, let me spell it for you. TOPTAL.com/MIXERGY. And second sponsor, the company that will make it so easy for you to get feedback from your audience and know what to do with it. It's called Delighted. And I'm delighted that they are sponsors. Thank you. All right. Bye, everyone.